We're discussing the issue of studying Gemara, Talmud, which everybody knows that assumes, I guess you'd call it, pride of place. The question, the way I understand it, is not why bother studying Talmud. If you want to have a knowledge, in terms of having a knowledge of the halacha, of course, one could argue that, well, you don't really have to study the Talmud to know the halacha. You can go to the Shulchan Aruch, to the codes, or to other codes, depending on your level of skill. Because, as I said, today there are as many books written for the general public, giving you the Shulchan Aruch. They go, the kids of Shulchan Aruch. You could have them, that have books special areas, a whole book on the laws governing this area, Tefillah, the laws governing Kriya Shema, Kashrut, different areas. So, in terms of just knowing the halacha, one could argue, if that's the reason, so why do we have to turn to the Gemara? Why not just look, get a good code and look it up? Or better yet, you could ask an authority, ask a rabbi. The only thing is that you can't, I don't think anybody will make the claim that you don't have to know anything. You're just going to, first of all, if you don't know anything, you don't even know what to ask. In order to ask a question, it presupposes you have a certain amount of knowledge. But perhaps one could make an analogy with medicine. People in general don't study medicine unless they want to be a doctor. Nobody puts it on his curriculum. An interesting question why people don't. And one could make the case, everybody's concerned about their health. So you want to maintain your health, so why don't you study medicine? They'd answer you is because someone was doing the studying for me. That's what doctors are called. And they charge you very handsomely for that service. But why don't you raise the same question and say, but you won't know what to ask the doctor unless you yourself have a certain amount of knowledge of medicine, as I'm asserting, that you won't know what to ask the rabbi unless you have a certain amount of knowledge. It's an interesting point to make the observation. If you take a look at the educational system, the types of subject matter that they teach students, teach children in elementary school and then even in high school, I think everybody's own history will confirm the amount of absolutely useless information they stuff in your head. Things that really don't seem to have any purpose whatsoever and pretty much torture you. And you have no choice, you're forced to memorize it or whatever it is in order to pass the tests. And then afterwards you forget it as quickly as you learned it, and it has no impact on your development, on your life. That's a huge criticism of the educational system. And one could think of all the various things that are out there that you could learn. The proof is that when you, in fact, become an adult, you go on your own, and you have to confront real issues of life that you never had to deal with when you were under the protection, so to speak, of your parents, then suddenly you're starting from scratch. The amazing thing is that after a person has gone through the entire educational system and he actually has to live life, he's pretty much starting from scratch. Not to mention in your own field, most successful doctors, lawyers, and other professionals will tell you that they learn the most when they finally get out there. But that I can't critique, because preparation is preparation. That's just the way the preparation is. It gives you a base, a foundation for confronting the experiential aspect. And you learn from the experiential. So I'm not saying that a person starting out ignorant or completely ignorant of law, for example, is going to have a hard time. He's not even going to be able to go through the experiences that he needs. Fine. But when you think about it, when you have to be responsible, how little you know about ordinary things, how to manage money, even banking, and different possibilities, investments, making out a tax form, the system. How little you know about the house. If something breaks in a house, you're at the mercy. You go bring an expert, but you haven't got a clue. Unless you have a particular skill. If somebody was skilled in carpentry, whatever, but then he's made that his thing. He's made it his business. But it's not because you're taught anything in school. About the world around you. you're naive in every area. Even in the, we discussed extensively the issue of marriage and dating, and in that area, as far as the school's concerned, you're naive. They don't. It's very important to know the capital of every state in the United States. Why? And it's very important to know the full history of the United States. And even there, not in the sense that you really know the history, but all the accidents of the history, the dates, the Boston Tea Party, is a type of thing that doesn't even make an impression in terms of any kind of real understanding. Useless information, which you don't carry with you. It doesn't teach you anything about the world today. So apparently it's much more important to know about the world of the past than it is about the world of the present. Useless information. You're in high school for 4 years. If they taught you about medicine, things you need to know about medicine, about your own body, that would be a tremendous contribution to health. Health benefits. And then, of course, society has to grapple with all the expenses of the health care and all that. But if each person, as a matter of course, you're there anyways for 4 years, you learn a lot of medicine. There's a lot of medicine you can learn. And, of course, it should be done anyway, which makes it interesting. I would imagine that it could be made interesting because each person has a natural curiosity to know, have the doctor arrive at his decision, and that removes a tremendous amount of the awe and the fear. And you have a doctor, you have no clue. And what he's doing, or why he's saying it. It could be, if you learned about it, they're pretty simple things. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you won't need doctors. You will need doctors, but as everybody says, if you're informed, the more informed the patient is, the better the care, the better the level of care. You could eliminate a lot of fraudulence that exists. What have you learned about an automobile? That's an important thing to you. However, if the car breaks down, you're at a loss. You haven't got a clue. So you'll say, okay, so you just call so-and-so. Yeah, but there's so many situations where you have the possibility of fixing it yourself, the manual, as again, the same thing with mechanics. That's another area where there's a tremendous amount of fraudulence due to the ignorance of the people. That's perhaps more so than even in medicine. Because in medicine, at least you have standards. People recognize you have to have standards for doctors. But people don't recognize you have to have standards for mechanics. If people had more information pertaining to these things, that would really decrease the possibility of fraudulence. Because again, you're desperate. You bring a car into a mechanic, it's not working. You're in a state of desperation. You have to get somewhere and everything. And you have no idea if this is something very significant or not. And whatever he does, you're so grateful for him to fix it. In that state of mind, you could pay a few $100 for something that, had you known about it, could be maybe $5 or $10. This is all a side point. But it goes a long way, it seems to me, that there's a tremendous irrationality in the whole idea of curriculum, what subject matter. It's very antiquated, in my opinion. It should be upgraded. There should be more options. And teaching for two reasons. First of all, to elicit, to stimulate the curiosity, the interest of the student. Because that's pretty much the biggest resistance in education, is boredom. It's very boring. It's painful. Most of the classes or courses you take in elementary and high school are sheer boredom and torture. Because you have to do a lot of painful mental labor, and you don't see any benefit in it whatsoever. That's the biggest problem. Now, one of the ways in which to remove that is by interest. Those things that you happen to be interested in and curious about. And there's a certain satisfaction of that curiosity because the teaching level is good, so that solves the problem. Get somebody interested in the subject and he's the greatest student. You're not going to have to motivate him. He's interested. He wants to learn. As far as learning how to think is concerned, the point is being made about study of logic. The study of logic does not train you, does not teach you how to think. It doesn't make you a thinker. So a person can know the basic rules of logic, it doesn't mean he's a good thinker. That's something different. In just the same way that studying the rules or the ideas, so to speak, about tennis or any sport is not going to make you a tennis player. That requires some other kind of instruction, which is training. Now, to become a thinker, the only way you can help somebody become a thinker is to train them to become a thinker. But then you need a substance. You need some type of material in which they're going to do the exercise of thinking. It seems of all the different areas that exist, Talmud is the best. That's one of the reasons why you study Talmud. But it's not the only reason. Getting back to our original question, though, before I go on with this, the difference between everybody having to study medicine and everybody having to study halacha, and I said that, practically speaking, you really don't have to study medicine, you just go to the doctor. In general, you don't have to be an expert because your body is the expert. Either you go, you make it a point to go for a general checkup, so you don't have to learn any medicine about that, or your body is telling you that you have to go to a doctor. Pain. God designed it in such a way that when there's an illness, you're going to know about it, generally speaking. So therefore, whenever something goes wrong, you call the doctor. Now that's not a wise policy because you should factor in the general checkup because of the fact that there are conditions that develop silently without informing you. So that's why it's a good idea to have a checkup once a year, whatever, depending upon your situation, your age, whatever the factors are. But other than that, you don't have to be an expert in the field itself, assuming that you're going to qualified doctors. When it comes to halachic observance, you don't have the same thing. There's nothing out there telling you that this is permitted or that's prohibited, and so on and so forth, unless you're familiar with the halachas. If you don't know basic information about the Yom Tovim, about Shabbos, about Kashrut, so then there's nothing to tell you to ask a rabbi. The only time you ask a rabbi is because you have a general sense that this is an issue, that this might be an area of halacha. If you're ignorant of vast bodies of halacha, so there's nothing going to tell you that you have a problem there, you have a question. So the reasons for the study of Talmud, basic reason is, of course, in order to be an observant Jew, one has to have familiarity with halacha, first and foremost. And there too, when you're talking about familiarity, it's very difficult to confine yourself just to the superficial works. The outlines, the summaries, the codes that people put together. I'm not saying that these books aren't useful. If they're written well and they're accurate, they're useful. However, again, you're going to be very limited. Because these types of works can only convey the simple results without giving you any of the knowledge behind it, the idea, the reasoning, the explanation. So it's very hard to base yourself purely on these codes. Codes, it's like reading instructions. First of all, how much can you absorb? And you're not going to really remember it, and you're certainly not going to understand it. Because you're getting the results, you're getting just the information without the background, and that's going to be very, very difficult in terms of halacha. Because it virtually means that you have to memorize every particular point. If you have concepts and ideas, so that naturally lead to certain results, then of course you don't have to do all that. You don't have to do that kind of memorization. Then you have an understanding of what the issues are about. Doesn't mean that you're qualified to make the decision, but you have knowledge. That's what's called knowledge. Just reading that kind of a text and memorizing the particulars is not really knowledge. So that's why the Torah demands that every Jew should obtain a knowledge of the halacha. Knowledge is important for the practical. Knowledge is also important for the appreciation. There's no comparison between one, an ordinary person that has no real appreciation of the halacha, the depth, the wisdom, the conceptual aspect, as opposed to someone who does. In terms of the performance of the mitzvos, there's definitely no comparison between one who approaches it in a purely routine kind of a way, has no clue as to the importance, the significance of what he's involved in, as opposed to someone who is and appreciates it. This performance of the mitzvah is going to be an entirely different performance. And indeed, When a person does tshuva, and one of his issues is that he wants to enhance his level of performance, the best way, I think, for a person to be more meticulous or conscientious, whatever word you want, in performance of a mitzvah is to study that mitzvah more. The more you study about tzedakah, the more apt you are to do the mitzvah and do it more properly. Because what happens is that you sort of negate it. You negate the significance of it. It's not at the forefront of your mind. But when you return to it and you study it and you see the significance of it, so then that's going to make it much more likely that you're going to perform it and perform it properly. But there are more reasons for the study of Talmud. The benefit of the study of Talmud is it's multifaceted. All the factors that I just mentioned are to you. In addition to which, it provides a benefit that nothing else I believe in the world can be compared to Talmud in terms of the benefit of training the mind. Training the mind to be able to think, because it's been structured in such a way that just about every mental maneuver is going to be elicited. See, there's disciplines. Some disciplines demand this type of a mental skill. Other disciplines demand a different type of a mental skill. Isolated. And fine. They all have the importance. But it's rare to find one single discipline that will encompass every mental skill, discipline, logical thinking, analytic, conceptual, imaginative, spatial thinking, everything. A person that masters Talmud will, in the course of doing so, perfect their mental faculties in virtually every type of maneuver, in every type of maneuver that exists. There's nothing to compare to it. And that's why Talmud has something which other disciplines don't have. That is to say that a person who's very good in math will, unless there's something else added to it, but by virtue just of their mastery of the one area, it doesn't have what's called transfer value. That's why you'll see that most of what our society regards as authorities, insofar as they are authorities, to whatever extent they are, they're authorities only in their area. You have a good doctor, a really good doctor, who knows this stuff and understands it. So he's an expert in the field of medicine. You talk to him about other areas, unless he's made a separate study, that's his area too. But just in general, as a natural result of the fact that he's an expert in medicine, when it comes to a different area, it's not the same person anymore. You're not talking to the same person, different person. That's true, virtually, of all the areas. Because these areas don't have transfer value. But a true Talmudist, someone who masters the mechanisms of thinking and refutation of false arguments, all the different maneuvers, becomes a thinker in general. It's also true that it doesn't... See, because there's so many different areas of halacha as well. Not just mental maneuver, but also there's so many different areas that you're going into. There's no one single area that you can focus on. And that adds to the exclusion of the others. The content, material, could be about building a sukkah, it could be about how to pray, it could be about kashrut, it could be about examining animals. I mean, there's so many different areas structuring the court system. So if a person goes through Talmud, it's not only that he's learned every mental maneuver, but he's trained to be able to approach virtually any type of subject matter. So what you've really produced is a universal type thinker. This person can, the true Talmud is any area. He could be a businessman. I'm not saying he could be a businessman. Insofar as a businessman has other skills that are not just thinking, because he has to have a certain type of confidence and courage, whatever, that's a different thing. But in terms of being able to think in the area, he could be a military thinker. Provided, of course, you have to provide him with the facts. Because Talmud doesn't include the facts of every subject. But a real Talmudist, on the highest level, of course, who exemplifies that type of perfection and has achieved this transfer value, it doesn't matter what the area is. He goes into any area and he approaches it with that, because it's thought. Talmud really requires the perfection of all the elements of thinking that go into understanding an area. That's basically what it is. So when you emerge with this abstract ability. And now, whatever subject you're going to study, you can tell the difference between a true Talmudist studying history, a different period of history, analyzing how he would analyze the Holocaust is different than how a historian in the area would analyze. Because the historian himself hasn't mastered the art of thinking to that level. The types of framing of the question, what the issues really are, and the refutation of certain arguments that people put forward, showing the flaws in those arguments, ain't no doma. There's not going to be any comparison. I could tell. I could tell the difference between a real thinker, I study different areas, and between mediocre, average, nothing special kind of thinker. What a person gets from a mastery of Talmud is the so-called derech. The derech, the way of thinking. That method. That method is universal. It's the same method that true thinkers use, doesn't matter what field they're in. They're all using the same thing, a certain type of a method. Of course, the results that they obtain are going to vary. They're going to depend upon the area that they're in. But the derech of thinking, there's one derech of thinking. There's only one. That's the mistake that people make. They think there's many drachim. That's a falsehood. Knowledge is arrived at through applying the processes of reason, utilization of reason on a given area of subject matter. It's just one. It's reason and logic. It's one logic. What differs is the nature of the material, and so on. Yeah, of course. The categories, the issues, and so forth will be different. But the derech is the same. That's why you'll understand something like the Rambam. That the Rambam was a universal thinker. And by the way, that's the ideal at the Navi. In order to gain prophecy, a person has to be a chacham, but a master of all areas of knowledge. Now, is that just means that, well, he happened to study Torah, then he decided to study, then, or no, it's something which flows from his perfection in the study of Torah itself. It flows from his perfection. The Rambam is the Rambam because of his mastery of Torah. Then he takes that expertise, that mastery, and whatever area he's going to study, he's going to be an expert. He's going to be an expert. Because he's a genius. And because he has mastered the method of thinking. Agavurcha is being mentioned at this point also, in addition, reinforces the point that we made yesterday, that there are two different brachos. There's a separate bracha for when you encounter a Talmud Chacham, as opposed to so-called secular scholar. It's a whole different phenomenon. In addition to the other points we made, it's a different type of a Chachma, because it's a mastery of a so-called universal methodology, method of thinking, that can be applied to any area. That's what the essence of a Talmud Chacham is. So these are the reasons for the study of Talmud. And of course the knowledge itself, like getting back to the knowledge itself. But now I just want to add that the knowledge of the material of the Talmud, which would be the knowledge of the halachic system, is important A, for practical reasons, but it's also important as a means. That's what Talmud Torah is, to bring you to appreciate the Chachmas Hashem, to appreciate the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Torah. Getting back to the mitzvah of Avos Hashem, of love of God, so the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvos, in the Sefer, he talks about Mishnah Torah, that essentially, his principle is that in accordance with the knowledge, that love flows from Yediyas Hashem. The greater the Yediyas Hashem, the greater the knowledge of God, the greater the love of God. And the knowledge of God is obtained from an appreciation of the Chachmas Hashem in nature per se, and in Torah. And now we've seen how these two really actually are related, go hand in hand. But to start off with, you must start off with Torah. All the practical factors that we've mentioned, and also the training value. A person must start off with Talmud. And you go from there. Of course, the study of Talmud is a lifelong ambition. A person never stops studying it, but it doesn't mean to say that he can't study other things as well. The only thing is that that's the foundation. The foundation or the gateway into the knowledge of other areas will come about from the mastery of Talmud itself. It's the best foundation that exists. Nothing has been discovered to compete with it. It's another critique of current contemporary educational system is that you're not even trained to think. You're just taught many different subjects. That's why you see that people that have PhDs have gone through the entire system. And they talk about subjects, and anyone that really understands thought can see all the flaws. They're far from being masters in thought. However, since the people listening to them have gone through the same system, maybe haven't advanced as far as they have, so they're impressed because they have certain accidents that people associate with knowledge. Terminology and smoothness and the ability to express themselves. Or things that are very pleasant to hear. They say things that you want to hear. Those types of things. And also there's the awe of authority. This person is an authority, so people, if he's an authority, he must be correct. But you can tell the difference between the secular world, what they put forth as being an authority, and what a real authority ought to be like. Someone who really has correct methodology in terms of thinking.